Hey folks, welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Kupel, and this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Evening, Jonathan. How you doing?
Pretty good, Mark. How are you?
Good, good. Doing good.
I was just looking at some of my specials online. There was a Woot today I was looking at.
Oh, yeah. I've been using that, actually. A kid that used to work in our office introduced me to Woot maybe 7-8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's always interesting what they have.
Yeah, did you ever get one of those boxes of crap?
Well, they've got different ones, the bag of crap. I never have. They were always sold out by the time I tried it. But that kid that told me about Woot, he made out like a bandit. Got like a $1,300 coffee machine for $5. Jeez. Turned around and sold it on eBay for $700 or $800, something like that.
Good for him.
Yeah. So I have to say it worked out good for him. But no, I bought a bunch of stuff on it.
Anything interesting?
My Yukon hammock.
Hey. And that is interesting.
My ThinkPad that I'm using right now, my laptop.
Okay. All right, well. So,
but yeah, no, it's been good. How about you?
I keep my eye on it. I've actually been looking more at the mass drops.
Yes.
And I actually did buy something on there once, so I don't mind a deal, but the Woot stuff, I can't catch things fast enough. They, you know, I'll fritter around my time and then they'll clear.
Right.
So, but today we'll have a really interesting discussion. We'll actually be able to learn a little bit more about Woot and the backside of it. We have the guys here from Yukon Hammocks.
Yeah, it should be good to hear the workings of it and from their end of it.
Yeah, I'll bet you it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's get on with the interview. All right, Mark, what we've got today for our interview is actually an interesting opportunity. We met Adam and Preston from Yukon Hammocks earlier in the year, actually in the summer, on a previous episode when we did the episode from the...
Down in Trail Days.
From Down in Trail Days, thank you.
Down in Damascus, yes. It was a great time.
And it was really neat that we got the opportunity to chat a little bit with them, and we invited them to come back on the show. For our listeners, I do want to... say that we did invite Preston and Adam before they decided to be episode sponsors, but they have been episode sponsors for several months, and we are grateful for that. Thank you, Adam and Preston, for that.
No problem.
So what I'd like to do first is get a little bit into your background. Both of you run a company that is involved in hammock camping and in outdoors. And, I'd like to get in a little bit about your background and find out what got you into it. Adam, I see from some of the conversations we've had, you're an Eagle Scout. You've got a lot of experience with hiking and it looks like fishing as well. You know, where do you come from? What did you like to do when you were a kid and kind of what led you into this career?
Sure. So growing up, scouting was certainly a big influence on my life and a lot of great memories. And we were part of a very active troop, Troop 420 in Larnberg, North Carolina. And we do camping, I would say sometimes twice a month. So it was always exciting to go out and learn scouting skills, go into the woods with friends. And from that, I just developed a real passion for the outdoors. After graduating, I had the chance to go overseas and see the world and work in manufacturing. So I had to take a step back from that. But after a few years of spending an awful lot of time for major brands and factories and things, really had a call to get back to the outdoors and rekindle sort of passion for being outside. And so that was part of the impetus for what got Preston and I moving with Yukon Outfitters and sort of opening dialogue.
Got it. And you're actually in China right now, right? We're doing the interview, but it's actually morning for you and evening for us, right?
That is correct.
That's kind of cool. Is there a lot of good camping out in China?
You know, it's still relatively limited, but the outdoor market in China is certainly growing. I would say that now they're trying to set up more parks and camping opportunities for citizens here. But in the the future, it's going to continue certainly to be a growing market here. Most of it involves day hiking. There's not a lot of opportunities for overnighting, which is something different. But it still has a lot of nice opportunities and scenery to enjoy here.
That's interesting. Is that a land management problem or?
I would say it's really probably a lot of it is a land management. We take for granted, I think, the national parks and state parks that we have in the U.S. and that just hasn't developed here yet.
And let's get on to Preston. Preston, you've been in the outdoors for a lot of your life as well. When we chatted a little bit offline, you indicated that you'd been hunting for most of your life and fly fishing. I'm guessing some of your experience is more influential in some of the product lines you have, like your bug out bag and stuff like that. But, you know, how far back does that go? What have you been doing with the outdoors in your life?
Well, growing up in North Carolina, I too was fortunate to our outdoor experiences and weekend campouts and stuff were really family oriented. So had a lot of rich memories. I come from a large family and, we didn't realize it at the time, but our folks figured out early on that it was a good way to keep a bunch of kids entertained, cost effectively through camping and
yes, it
outdoor
is.
Activities. And, we kind of took it for granted growing up, but, now it's really fun, to see, especially with so much development and, you know, innovation that we have seen in the industry really in the last 15, 20 years of how it's just changed tremendously. And so a lot of that harkens back to those times where you wish, you know, you're lucky. I'm the oldest of four. So hauling in all the gear was one of my jobs, you know, so, I learned the benefits early on of packing correctly and watching your weight. And, it's really fun now because with the, expansion of new materials and substrates that, you can really push the envelope, for ultralight perspective. But, and that goes back to the hunting side too, you know, we were taught, you know, never shoot anything you don't prepare to fully harvest and take care of and eat yourself. So, you know, we didn't grow up hunting for horns. It was more to put, you know, food in the freezer. So, it's real easy to get carried away with all the trinkets and gear, you know, that both, the hook and bullet and outdoor side, you know, all those options. And so it's nice to kind of, harken back to some, you know, just taking out in the woods what you really need. And, we try to include that in our, with our vision for the brand to this day.
Yeah, that's great. It's always interesting because many of my camping friends don't think about the fact that most of our hunting friends are real naturalists, and in fact are oftentimes as concerned or more concerned with preservation than your diehard crunchy granola types for very different reasons. But there's a lot of common ground there, and a lot of people, I think, miss that side of the hunting ethos.
It's true. Like a lot of things, you have a small few, a minuscule minority that can kind of poison the well for a group of folks in general, and that means both your crunchy granola side to your hunting side. So, you know, but at the end of the day, especially here in the Southeast where we're from, you know, you've got folks and families who they spend their time outdoors in the spring and summer, camping. Then when fall hunting season hits, you know, a lot of families are teaching, hey, look, here's what you do. But, you know, what if you run into a situation where you do need to camp because for whatever reason you can't get back to your vehicle or get back to your cabin, you need to be able to kind of take care of yourself. So you're absolutely right. I mean, that preservation and, you know, leave no trace, you know, ask anybody that's hunted, either deer or elk in the Rockies, how important leave no trace is. You start getting messy with what you're doing out there and you become part of the food chain. So
yeah,
it's very important.
Now, this is a little unique because we're interviewing the two of you. How did you guys meet, and how did that lead to Yukon Outfitters? And either one of you can answer that.
That's a good question. I'll take a stab at it. Adam and I met as students at Appalachian State University. We had several classes in the College of Business curriculum. And then, as we, you know, got closer to graduation, we both, had the opportunity to apply, and then were later selected for the China Fellows Program for, business study in Asia that Appalachian State offered. And, it was really, you know, Adam's from the eastern part of the state. I was from more central part. He was real active in the Greek social scene, as well as, with the local, troop and boom in terms of Boy Scouts. And I was a football player. So we kind of came from two very different backgrounds, but
yeah.
Realized really quick that we had a shared interest in, the emerging market from the business side that China had to offer. And you gotta also remember that at that time, late '90s in North Carolina, we were losing a ton of jobs to Asia in our furniture and textile industry. So, you know, it was almost like, I don't know Adam's particular experience, but, you know, when I would go home and say, hey, this is really great, I got accepted to this program and going to spend some time in China studying, business practices and language. And it was in some cases, it was not a very welcomed response just because it was such a hot button issue, in the state at the time. Because a lot of jobs were being lost, but we got a chance to visit and after graduating, we both decided to move to China and start cutting our teeth wherever we could. And I was able to start out in the footwear program and Adam in furniture, and we always kept in touch. And just as our careers developed and grew, we were able to kind of make decisions to work closer together, which culminated on when we were both single men, we used to take trips to back to North America for our vacation to kind of get fresh air and participate in environments that we don't normally, you don't normally see with the industrial metropolis that China was. And one of those trips was to Yukon Territory on a fly fishing trip on the Snake River. And it was I took full and total responsibility, but it was a full guided trip that I had found. This was the early days, not really, internet didn't really work very well. So it was all by phone. And wow. The guy picked us up and we just came there with a couple roller boards of clothes and nothing else. And he's like, no, don't worry, I'll take care of everything. You guys just get here and it'll be a great 10 days. Well, the second day it ended up raining heavily, and it did not stop raining the entire time. And it was just a freak weather system that just set right there where we were. And the gear that the guy had provided was woefully inadequate for the terrain in the area. And we were 600 miles away from the closest place to do it. And it was, especially ironic considering that, at the time, I was, working, developing a product for K2, with there and dealing with a lot of, sporting goods products and for where we lived and just being thrust into a situation by our own doing that, where we had inadequate gear. So, we kind of complained about it the first day, and then the second day under an old tarp, in a cold rain, we said, hey, look, how could we, make some better gear than this so that, guides and people can enjoy the outdoors and not have to, worry about taking out a second mortgage in their home for it. So it really all started like that.
Now, UConn seems to be really popular on Woot. How did that get started?
Well, so after that trip, we both decided it would be a great idea to quit our jobs and jump into being our own business folks. Mm-hmm. And, we had some contacts, through the sporting goods industry with some folks over at Woot. Woot was just, kind of coming on the scene, and was very popular at the time, and pitched an idea, which they said, "Yep, let's go for it." So, you know, that's kind of what was our brand introduction to the world, was through that particular business model. And we started with one simple hammock, simple double hammock, and a set of hiking poles. And from there, just about 2 years later, we had expanded to over 30 SKUs and a bustling brand to tend to. So it was really just happenstance and just kind of a gut feeling that this would be a good way to go.
So, and then after Woot, you were also, looks like in 2009, you had your first event on Amazon?
That's correct. Yep. We rolled the dice and took a gold box gamble for us, because we had to have all the product in-house in-country before a single piece was sold, and was a very successful gold box. We moved just under 25,000 units in less than 8 hours. So that was really awesome. And looking back, you know, we feel fortunate to have been in a position to take a chance and put a product that we felt, you know, that like we had done a good job developing out there for, you know, the real vote. And that's with the end customer, end user.
Oh, sounds great. Yeah, actually, I bought my first hammock is a Yukon Double that I got on Woot about a year and a half ago, and it's still going strong. So now, since then, you've seen, actually, I was on your website today, and, you know, YukonOutfitters.com, and you got quite a diverse product line now, not just the hammocks. I saw some, you've got your insulation now as well that you came out with last year, was it? The top quilt and under quilt?
That's correct.
And then you also, there was quite a bit of, you know, the bug out gear. And actually, I saw a nice car emergency kit, which was nice because that one, I was going through the contents of that, because in Buffalo, there's always people getting stuck in the snowstorms. It wasn't just gear for one person. It seemed like there was multiple for like a car full of people. So how's the, going back to the hammocks, how's the top quilt and under quilt been going?
It's been fantastic. You know, we wanted to, we felt really good about bringing a lot of other folks to hammock camping that otherwise wouldn't consider it.
Mm-hmm.
Through, you know, our brand strategy at the time. And then from that, you know, conversation begat a lot of other items that have done really well. You mentioned the top quilt and under quilt, which have just been really great, in terms of, response and reviews. And we feel like it's at a very attractive price. But in addition, we've got a walkabout rainfly, which is a, you know, lightweight, packable rainfly solution that will fit not only our hammock, but just about every other hammock out there on the market. And you know, at $40, that's it's a pretty good price. It's well worth it to stay dry.
Yeah. Yes, that always can always make or break a trip.
But you know, the hammock is it was our very first item.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we felt like that as our brand has grown, Adam and I made the corporate decision to move 100% of our hammock production here to the United States. And, that was, so that, you know, we could, tend to the market needs a little quicker. Obviously quality is something that's extremely important. And while, you know, we felt really good about the quality of our China hammocks, we wanted to push it one step further while, you know, bringing back some jobs here to the United States. So that's an area as our brand grows and as we push forward, that you're going to see a lot of unique development in, and especially with, you know, your traditional standard, lightweight double to ultralight. You know, for the guys that are counting their ounces on the trail, all the way to, you know, your family or recreational grade hammock systems. And, you know, starting earlier this year, you know, every hammock sold, every Yukon Outfitters hammock sold will come with tree straps. We just felt like that was super important because you're not going to buy a pair of shoes without shoelaces or a car without tires. So why would you buy a hammock without tree straps?
Right. Makes
sense.
All
those come together now.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to kind of pursue that a little bit. The fact that you're starting to include the tree straps means you're thinking a little bit more from kind of the consumer perspective. What's the odds that you guys are thinking about taking... Let me ask that a different question. Are you guys thinking about taking that one step further to something a little bit more kit-like? You know, there's a few hammock manufacturers out there. I know I tend to extol the virtues of my Hennessy, but one of the things I really appreciated about it was that it was kind of an all-in kit when I got it. I didn't have to make any decisions about, you know, doing it. And you've got all the pieces for a kit, including actually insulation, which is unusual. You're starting to see a little bit of that from some of the competitors out there, but you're not seeing it commonly. You know, you've got the tarp, you've got the underquilt, you've got the top quilt, the hammock, the tree straps. Have you guys ever thought about actually having a kind of a no-brainer kind of a kit thing for people?
Sure. We've tossed that around. Absolutely. You know, Tom's system over Hennessy is fantastic. You know, we all consider him the godfather of the hammock community, and he's got some great stuff. But what we're seeing is the level of customization, either by the individual consumer or the geographic area where that customer may live, often requires a lot of different things. Okay. So, currently where our position is that, you know, we feel like with our category assortment, that, you know, we're offering almost on-demand customization depending on the adventure, the trip, or the geographic situation. So, you know, if you're, you know, the folks in Florida, they're lucky. They get to hammock camp year-round just about, with the exception of this, you know, we've got a little bit of storm coming this weekend. So, they probably won't be doing too much of that then, but, you know, they're not going to require, unless you're really in the northern panhandle part, one of the underquilt systems. So at our price points, you can kind of build out the kit as needed and often come well below some of the other master kit systems.
Sure.
And while not letting too much of the cat out of the bag, we do recognize all the points you're mentioning there and look forward to, presenting some of the developmental goodness that comes out of having, you know, your own production and design facility literally right behind our wall here in Tennessee. It allows us extremely rapid timelines in developing and presenting new ideas and products to the marketplace.
Yeah, that's one of the things, you know, to get back to the American manufacturing, that's one of the things that I've heard a lot of business, and this is kind of more of a business thing, of course, not as much hammock camping, but I've heard a lot of people say they've brought manufacturing back to the U.S. because it increases their turnaround, doesn't compromise quality, and you tend to lose fewer batches due to quality constraints. Is that kind of what you guys have experienced as well? Or maybe, Adam, that's maybe something you can speak to since you're most directly related to or interacting with the Chinese side of your manufacturing.
Sure. You know, as we all know, China certainly has its manufacturing strengths, and those aren't going to go away overnight. With that said, as China has continued to develop, they're moving away from focused on export growth and looking at domestic consumption and things. But really, as a brand, as far as Preston Adam and Yukon Outfitters and what our team believes in, we really wanted to invest in U.S. manufacturing because it's something we can be passionate about. It's a long ball play. We take great pride in U.S. manufacturing. We love being close to market and innovation side of things. And having manufacturing in the U.S., it does help speed of turns. And what we've learned is taking some of the China manufacturing mindset of ways to have an efficient supply chain and get things done. When you apply those to U.S. manufacturing, the U.S. can have a vibrant, strong manufacturing base. And we're going to continue to put all the efforts we can into growing our Tennessee factory and really just focus on as much U.S. manufacturing as we can, as long as it still brings a great product and a great value to the customer.
Okay. Now, one of the things, in terms of your market position, one of the things I sometimes read on the forums and stuff like that is, you know, people refer to the Yukon brand as inexpensive, but much better quality than I expected. And I see that kind of again and again, like people don't expect to get such good value from something that isn't as expensive as some of the premium brands. Is that kind of how you've tried to shape your market position?
I'll take that one. You know, that right now, that would not be an inaccurate statement. You know, where we broke into the market, we wanted to add that value while not compromising on quality. And that was important. But a decision that we've made is, this year is to support, sports specialty. And that means your local sporting goods store. And to put the product in the hands of the true local experts that know the region, that know the area well, and let them see, hey, look, this is the new Yukon product that's here and available. It's made here in the United States, and just kind of, but still offer that exceptional deal. I mean, our Patriot hammock system that comes with cinch buckles, that's at $79. And when you look out and see what's in the marketplace, we feel like that, you know, we're one of the few hammock brands that are up. You get a double oversized hammock with a proprietary Orsino diamond ripstop material and a unique cinch buckle, hanging system, suspension system, all in one package. So, you know, while your earlier statement would be accurate, you know, where we're at, I guess today, or where we're focused on today, is kind of changing that a little bit. And, you know, while we appreciate that direct to consumer experience and of where, you know, transactions similar to the ones, you know, we mentioned about with Wood earlier, mm-hmm. We're kind of changing a little way, grow up in a way, to support, those outdoor specialty retailers that really drive the category in each region and market.
Got it. Kind of something like what Eno's done with the Scout Shops and some of the chain retailers.
Well,
they're a different product.
Well, they are. And hey, I mean, any of us that own a hammock company can thank them for starting the category. So there's no bones about that. But, you know, whether or not, I don't know if you'll ever see a Yukon hammock at, say, an Ace Hardware, perhaps, but like you might find an Eno hammock, but we kind of want to take it one step further with fabric innovations, suspension system innovations, and really create a unique customer experience that tells our brand story now of, hey, look, this is a quality crafted American made product where it checks all the boxes. It fits the budget. It includes suspension, and it employs Americans.
Absolutely. That's important. Do you guys have much of an international presence, or do you want one?
To date, our international presence would probably be, mostly representative of some of the servicemen and women in the armed forces that are using our hammocks. So we've supported several programs that outfit several deployed units of the armed forces through our American made hammocks.
Sure.
I know that's a bit unique, we've outside of that, you know, we've been real happy with our South America sales. And sales in and around Hong Kong and look forward to growing those opportunities. Because again, I hope we don't sound like a broken record here, but, the demand for American made goods abroad is quite healthy right now. And, we are a little bit surprised to see, hey, look, we're bringing the stuff back over here, and the price is going up a little bit, but it actually opened a lot of doors overseas, because a lot of the overseas buyers really have a healthy appetite for American-made products.
That's interesting. Yeah, the I know the range of producers or manufacturers, for instance, in the EU is pretty limited for hammock products. I think there's only one or two manufacturers out there, like significant manufacturers. We've got a bunch of listeners in the UK, for instance, and I only think there's one UK local manufacturer for hammocks, right? Is it
Was it Double D?
Yeah, I think it's Double D.
I know DD is out of the UK or Wales, I think. They make a fine hammock. Yeah. I'm not sure if all of their hammocks are made in the UK, but they're definitely first to mind.
What has driven the growth of the current line of products UConn has to include other products?
Well, that's the most exciting and oftentimes the most dangerous position to be in when you've got an outdoor brand, is you want to basically include all of your hobbies under your brand. You can't always do that. So, and I'm the worst at that. Adam does a really good job of keeping us focused on task, or else, we might be in, crazy, like Bigfoot hunting gear or something. You never know.
Is he texting you right now telling you not to mention the Bigfoot hunting gear?
Well, I could make a case. A lot of our stuff, you could probably use it if you're going to go find Squatch, but I would definitely want to be in one of our camo hammocks for sure, listening. But not to get sidetracked, we're excited about some of the new lines of products, especially on the hard goods side that we're looking forward to bringing to the market, that are kind of in development and in hardline testing right now in our factory. So, be on the lookout for some things and some packs and stuff like that to help your hiking and lifestyle outdoor community in the near future from UConn for sure.
No, actually, going along with that, how do you come up with new ideas for, you're coming up with, and some of the things you showed us down at Trail Days, these new products and all, is it just something you see that there's a need for, or is it customer interaction, or is it just you're talking amongst yourself, hey, somebody needs this?
Well, that's a really good question. We've in spite of a brand that was almost born really from two dreams and a online overnight, we spend a lot of time and effort in a lot of outreach festivals and events like Trail Days, Go Fest Outdoors in Roanoke, things like that, and a lot of even smaller Appalachian Trail events. And the reason is to kind of get there and listen and see, hey, look, what's working on the trail or in the woods? Mm-hmm. What's not working? And identify needs. And to us, that's kind of the biggest area of development. Now, it's also really easy to think, especially if you've got a hard goods sporting in the sporting goods industry background, it's easy to try to critique another brand's product or something. But we always try to say, all right, how do we improve the experience, the outdoor experience? How do we make it that much more enjoyable and try to keep that ethos during those, brainstorming sessions about new product.
Oh, great.
So I remember when we were talking at Trail Days, you guys mentioned the kind of a group or a consortium that you were organizing to try to set some standards around, I think either manufacturing or sailing practices, something like including tree straps, for instance, in your hammocks. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? How's that going? What are you guys doing with that?
Sure. We've reached out to, as many of the hammock brands, we know of, or, you know, I know it seems like there's a new one every day. But to try to come up with a industry standard, loosely Hammock Manufacturers Association to kind of self-regulate some areas, regarding, the safe deployment of suspension systems. What's the best way to test the load rating on your hammock, et cetera. And, what's a safe, working load? How are these numbers, arrived at? And the reason is that, with the category expanding now as its own, standalone category and not just, a fad, hammock camping is growing. It's here to stay. It's become increasingly important in our opinion that we need to put down the swords and kind of come together and do a little bit of self-regulating. When you have, states that are banning hammock camping in state parks, because of the damage done to trees, when rope suspension systems are being used, that's a serious thing. And we feel like it's important to try to bring everybody together and share some ideas. And, I'm not talking about anything proprietary or unique. It's not a compare and contrast, just, hey, look, here are some things that we've observed that work when coming up with safe testing methods. Tom Hennessy's done a great job with all of his, his entire career of, determining, safe suspension widths for trees and things of that nature. And where the end result is a safe product, and it's a better product, and it's an educated customer, because a lot of people don't know that when you buy that cheap Groupon hammock that comes with a rope suspension system, you're basically, killing the tree that you attach it to. And it's important that that's known. And college campuses are coming out against hammock camping. And this is, this is not a pastime that needs to be, frowned upon, the way skateboarding was treated in the 90s. And, so that's kind of a thought process that we've tried to along with other brands help bring together and generate some, initiate a conversation, for all those points.
That's cool. Yeah. Whenever you hear a company say the word self-regulate, usually it means before somebody does it for us. How's that coming? Are you guys making progress?
We're making great progress. It's always fun because a lot of the B2B shows, outdoor retailer, and you show up in a competitor's booth and first they're like, what are you doing here? And we always say, hey, look, we come in peace and here's what we're talking about. And everybody's been really open, the guys over at Grand Trunk, Hummingbird Hammocks, Eno is starting to listen to that conversation, but also the boys over at Kamek have been really receptive. And we know that there's more, and I apologize if I'm leaving anybody out that we've spoken to, even the guys over at Buyer of Maine, they've been really receptive. So, but we want it to be inclusive. We don't want it to, there's enough competition on the retail battlefield, but we want it to be, something that is, that's open, that's healthy. And, cause at the end of the day, it's the, consumer that benefits and really our state and national park system too, because, you're seeing more and more hammocks and fewer tents when it comes to shelter systems.
Absolutely. Well, if there was somebody it's probably wishful thinking because we've only got 15 listeners, but if one of them were happened to be a hammock manufacturer, how would they get in touch with you?
I bet you've got more than a few hammock manufacturers listening to this podcast.
Well, but, it was only 10 listeners a while ago. Now it's 15. So I figure we're growing some.
And probably 10 of them are hammock manufacturers. No, I'm kidding. reach out to us. I mean, send us a message on Instagram, on Facebook. I mean, our teams are really good to getting these messages to Adam and I, and we'd love to include them in the conversation. You know, maybe you're a brand that you just, you had a successful kickstarting event, and now you're trying to figure out, I need to really look into this stuff. You know, we'd love to include you in the conversation, and hopefully at some point we'll be able to get everybody together at a mutually beneficial location to kind of hammer out some details. And it's important to remember that this type of, you know, self-regulating has been done before. I mean, the climbing industry did it 30 years ago. When you started having a lot of, you know, an influx of a lot of different rigging systems and things, and where a lot of questions were out there in terms of the safety and strength of some of those, you know, of climbing accessories and things of that nature. So they did a really good job, and we're trying to kind of follow that same model, for the hammock side of things. So, trust me, you go to the Yukon Outfitters website, send us a message and say, hey, look, so-and-so need to talk to Preston or Adam, and you'll be hearing from us really soon, really quickly.
Yeah, you guys should do a manufacturer's group hang.
That'd be great. That would be fun. I mean, we should do that at outdoor retailer or something. Or it'd be more fun to do it in the wintertime.
Mark, how many trees do you have in your backyard?
What's that?
Yeah, Mark, we're gonna come to your backyard in Buffalo for a manufacturer's group hang.
Yeah, you're not gonna get too many people in my backyard. Especially since, you know what, I don't have any trees in my backyard.
that would be fun. I mean, it'd be like a automotive car show where everybody, that would be fun from a just pure competition standpoint. Come out with the craziest, newest prototype for the group hang and talk about safe working loads.
That'd be cool.
And sheer force. Yeah,
that'd be great. So, what's your vision for UConn in the future? What do you see coming up?
We've got a lot of really neat things. One thing that's new for this holiday season is our line of printed hammocks, which was very well received at the fall shows that we've done, and we've got over 60 different custom prints and designs to where each individual can hang in a hammock that fits their personality or their passion. So everything from awesome, unique Americana festival prints to, crazy pictures of the birth of a star to, you know, some really colorful options that we really feel like, where the category is going. And it's just super awesome to be able to, if you think it, then, you know, we can print it in a matter of hours here in our shop in Tennessee, and then it's a hammock by the end of the day. So that's pretty exciting.
Well, yeah, it sounds great. So I know you, recently you have your new manufacturing plant in the U.S., which is in Tennessee, I believe.
That's correct.
Now, how important is it for you to bring that manufacturing back to the U.S.?
Incredibly important. I mean, it is a core pillar of where our company and brand is today. You know, and Adam, feel free to jump in anytime, but being the managing partner that has that responsibility on a daily basis, you know, we made a conscious decision to forego, you know, profits in some cases and bring stuff back here. And that's, in largely part, you know, where we both spent over a decade in Asia, working in Asia. And in a lot of cases, when working for other companies, we're responsible for the shutting down of a lot of factories. And just as we started to, you know, see all of those points Adam mentioned earlier, we felt like it was important and the time was right to make a responsible decision in bringing those jobs and that work back here. It takes a few dollars away from the bottom line, but we feel like in the long run, I mean, when you know, if someday if y'all can ever come take a visit, you know, that would be awesome to just kind of take a tour of the plant. But you know, we've got 26 folks there working, you know, our little shop in Alamo, Tennessee, that before we opened those doors, you know, they were unemployed. They didn't work for somebody else. They were unemployed. And that to us at the end of the day, you know, if our little corner of the sporting goods world, if that's a way that we can kind of push the needle, back, you know, in this direction, you know, we feel like that's important.
Well, that's great to hear.
You know, and the crazy thing is if every American just spent an extra $10 on Made in America product, I mean, the economic benefit is, I've just saw one economist say it would be almost, you know, in hundreds of millions of dollars. So think about it. If you just took one Christmas present and say, look, this needs to be made in America, and every American did that, and that would be huge.
Yeah, it would be. I agree. I think that the manufacturing being a higher quality makes it worthwhile, makes people willing to spend that extra money, though. I mean, it can't be the same quality.
Correct. You know, and that's what we got away from a lot of the lightweight polyester Taslins and stuff that you see in a lot of the hammock options and you know, gone with the ripstop versions and worked on improving the finishes, working with the mills here in the U.S. To develop unique fabrics. I mean, one of ours, you know, Gear Junkie, you know, dropped a review that we were, you know, it was a bit unexpected on our recycled hammock SomniSmart this past week. And it's really, you know, it's kind of encouraging to see, hey, look, you know, people are starting to take notice of, wow, I can have a hammock that's, you know, made of 30 recycled plastic water bottles. And, every square inch of that hammock was made here in the U.S., you know, so, you know, it's not just the folks in Tennessee with UConn that are benefiting, you know, it's the webbing suppliers, it's the trims, the label makers, the fabric. I mean, the truckers that transport the product. I mean, it's a true, you know, benefit for a lot of different companies.
I saw a press release about something called Alamo Pride. What's that? Is that anything to?
Adam, you want to take that one?
Sure. We really just haven't given a name, but Alamo Pride is the name of our U.S. manufacturing facility in Alamo, Tennessee. If you see press articles about that, Alamo Pride and UConn are sister companies.
Okay, cool.
That's right. Yep.
Are you guys doing anything besides hammock camping there? Are you guys going a little bit vertical with the manufacturing, or?
Well, vertical is always the ideal situation, you know. But we, you know, we wanted for a bunch of different reasons, you know, it is set up for two separate entities, you know, so UConn is a customer there, you know, just like any other customer. But at Alamo Pride, we've been, you know, somewhat successful in kind of, opening a safe haven for, hard good and ultralight products where they can be made. And there's several, branded companies, you know, in the outdoor industry that utilize that space right now. So bags, mats, you know, all types of accessories in even the fitness, you know, category too. So it's UConn is a part of what goes on there, but it's also exciting to see and to assist and kind of offer that service to other brands where American made is important too.
All right. One thing I like to ask, and I think I'm starting to turn into a practice. I like to ask if there's one thing that you could teach, and I'm going to ask both Preston and Adam if you could both share something. But if there was one thing that you could teach to everybody you meet, like everybody, it doesn't have to be hammock related or manufacturing related or whatever. But if there's one thing you could teach to everybody, what would it be?
I'll go. If I could teach one thing to everybody, it would be how to listen to what the woods were telling you. And meaning if you're walking in the woods, you can tell a lot about the reaction from the trees, the animals, and to let you know kind of what's around, almost a situational awareness about being in the outdoors. And to take that one level further, if you have a dog or a pet, you can learn even more about what's going on around. And it's really fun and interesting to be a, you know, in the outdoors with someone. And then, our dogs are trained where if they're walking, they're not making a lot of noise. They're always listening and watching, what's, you know, what's around the next tree. And, but there's a lot they can tell you, in terms of how healthy that environment is, you know, what types of game are around. And, you know, if you listen and observe, you know, you can see all the fine things the forest has to offer.
Cool. Adam?
You know, this might be far off topic, but the one that's really kind of struck me is, appreciate each day that you have. And often the things that are most important to you are the things that you tend to take for granted. I have a beautiful wife and three little ones. And, about a year and a half ago, I found myself losing my vision and, got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and struggled with it a bit. But through the whole process, I think I ultimately gained better perspective, and priorities and what matters in life. So I would say, hey, you know, really the things you love and that are important to you, make sure you give them all the care that you can and take every day as an opportunity to show love and respect to, hey, people that cross your path, because everybody's got a story. Just, be quiet long enough to listen to it and enjoy the ride.
Very cool. Thank you.
So every episode we like to do a little off topic, little round table where everybody kicks in their ideas and all. And, this is probably a two part one. So dirt bagging or DIYing, you know, repurposing something, finding something in a big box store or even a secondhand store, thrift store, see something and repurposing it. You know, it could be a kitchen item or clothing item, or even just starting from scratch and doing a DIY. Now, I do, you know, I use the alcohol stove, so you're repurposing a soda can or a Red Bull can or a Fancy Feast. I have a lot of gear that I've sewn up, my tarps and stuff. Do, you know, being actual manufacturers, do you guys do anything like that, or do it for prototypes, or, you know, or is it basically, you know, I own a manufacturing company, I just have them make it for me?
No, all the time. In fact, our production manager often sometimes frustrated because we always want to try to run the first one ourselves. but the, you know, there's a lot of knowledge that comes into, when you can make your own product. And if it's a tarp, you know, there's different, seams, you know, if you are talented enough to do a true fail seam or a poor man's fail seam where you can, you know, create a waterproof, stitch without having to actually, weld it or waterproof it. You know, those types of things are really unique and important. And those out there, and the hammock community is unique in the fact that, you know, a lot of folks, their first foray into it is building their own gear or DIYing their own gear. And it teaches you a lot of things. It teaches you what works based on the machines that you have available to you, but also it teaches the importance of taking care of your gear, because when you're the one throwing the stitches, you're going to also be extra careful in how you use and enjoy that stuff. So, absolutely. In fact, some of the craziest, you know, our featherweight system, you know, that comes out with suspension at under 6 ounces. You know, Adam stitched up the first hammock of that, and he put his money where his mouth is. He hung in that first. So, yeah, it can get dangerous, especially, you know, if we come from a sourcing trip and come back with some really cool exotic materials. You know, when you own the keys to the building, you can run those machines well into late in the night. And it's fun to kind of see what comes out, a lot of the rough prototypes, you know, those are born in those evenings where you get a piece of, and you know, maybe a cold beverage is involved at some point, and you come up with with your vision, and then if you know that proof of concept is successful, then we hand it to the engineers who are professionals to make it clean and pretty. So, absolutely.
Actually, you know, going along with that, going off topic of the off topic. Now, you come out with a new if you come out with a new product, how many prototypes did you go through on average, or even, you know, whatever, where you finally go, you know what, this is it. This is what we're going to go into production, have the engineers check it, and we're going to sell this. I mean, is it, are you going through 20, 5, 3, or, you know, or you just get the golden?
Oh, my goodness. If I look at some of the most recent ones, I mean, you're well over a dozen, probably 15, 16 different variants.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you feel like you're close, then you need to, it needs to be, go through a battery of tests and abuse to make sure it holds up. I mean, even our what we call our more lifestyle hammocks, the Patriots, and the ones that are a little bit heavier. I mean, we take those through the same rigors and abuse on the trail as you would a, you know, really exotic ultralight, just to see how it holds up and see what happens. So, we've gotten a little bit more refined now. I mean, early on, we determined that the way to test, strength was to hook a hammock up, and the suspension system to the hitch of our, F-350 and to tow a Honda Civic around the factory parking lot and then measure the delta of any changes in the stitches and seams. And
wow,
we've gotten a lot more polished in that regard. Well, you know, we can achieve the same result in house now without having to tow automotive vehicles around. But, it's a lot. I mean, because, you know, when you make the stuff and you're the brand, I mean, the buck stops here. The buck stops with us. You know, we don't have, oh, well, your hammock had a problem. Well, let us talk to our factory and we'll get back to you. I mean, there is no, we don't have that level, that layer in our model. So it's extremely important that, we test it for color fastness. We test it for strength, durability, how it's going to wear. You know, you would be shocked to know the number of rounds of stuff sacks that are designed so that you can easily stuff and get your hand in while keeping it, small. And there's a lot that goes into something as what would seem as mundane as an attached stuff sack. So, I think that's a good question, because it's more than you would probably imagine, for sure.
Now, Adam, how about you? Do you do any DIY stuff at all, or is it, you know, or is it more product testing type?
You know, actually, I guess my form of DIY is product development. Every day, I'd say having access to factories on both sides of the planet certainly takes DIY and accessibility as far as materials and processes to a new level. But, definitely stay in tune with the DIY market. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of those folks are innovative and have a lot of good ideas, and they're tinkerers and experimenters by nature. And, just staying in tune to the entire community, whether it's DIY websites, the hammock forums is an amazing place for information, but I'm wholeheartedly a supporter of it. I think if people are passionate about it and they have fun dialing in their gear and tweaking it, and it helps them get outdoors and have a good time, then by all means, I think it's fantastic.
Sounds good.
You know, one thing that's real interesting on, and you mentioned the dirtbagging side of, you know, I'm sure y'all been following the development and just the organic sharing of the Costco, camp blanket, the
yes.
down camp blanket at Costco, and folks, you know, fashioning under quilts. And I think it's awesome, to see, you know, a product that's brought in bulk at a crazy price and then that type of repurposing. But We met a fellow who, you know, we were kind of, who knows, you know, he's local, he's outdoorsman, and he had that, and I challenged him. I said, look, I bet I could make a better one out of an old down comforter than the Costco version, because for coverage standpoint, and you've got some cold spot issues and stuff with the blanket or whatever, but if you think about it, all the old bedding that gets thrown out, you know, you probably go to your local Goodwill and found a down comforter. And if you hem it right, you can kind of shape it, to an area to where it'll fit a hammock really good. But you want to, you know, wash it obviously first before you use it, but, it really eliminates the level of cold spots that may happen, when you're just taking a down blanket versus something that was used in bedding and kind of, repurposing a product that you know had a lot of testing and development go into it, because there's a lot that goes into bedding. So, that's just a little aside that, it's kind of fun to play with and to see.
Yeah, actually funny you should mention that, Jonathan, isn't your first underquilt, repurposed, or some, harvested down from secondhand stores?
Yeah, actually that's true. My son actually still uses it sometimes, and I have a top quilt that I made in the same fashion. I harvested down from just old down jackets and stuff that my wife found at church sales, mm-hmm. that type of thing. It's a nice ethical repurpose repurposing to a material that oftentimes isn't ethically harvested from its source. You know, with the, supposedly the decrease in the consumption of goose has led to a decrease in the freely available goose down market. And so there's some issues with, you know, how it's sourced and stuff. And it was certainly a lot cheaper. And I definitely felt good about not letting, you know, not having that go into the, go into the trash, but actually be able to reuse it, you know, so kind of good in a number of senses. It's a pain in the butt to handle down though, man. Ugh.
Static cling of those small plumes end up everywhere.
Oh, it's in your nose and it's in the air and it's, my wife was not happy for a few days.
That's a garage project.
Oh my God. But the air currents in the garage everywhere. Are even worse.
I mean, that's why, you know, from a manufacturer's perspective, my hat's off to those folks that are doing that, commercially speaking in the U.S. because there's so many regulations you have to follow when you're blowing down and keeping that your air quality safe and everything like that. So it's a, that is, you're absolutely right. That can get out of hand quick.
I was tempted to do another top quilt, but I couldn't find a reasonable price for 1 ounce packages. And I didn't want to deal with splitting the down from a 2 ounce package again. It was, you know, just handling the raw down. I'm like, you know, a 1 ounce package, I could just blow it right into, you know, blow it into the one section, you know, between the baffles, but 2 ounces, then you're screwed, man.
Yeah, it becomes difficult. I mean, but we've fixed that problem for you, Jonathan. I mean, we've got our wildfire trail quilt that works extremely well.
Yes, you do.
For a top quilt. So you're covered.
Yeah, it's nice. I actually like that. The one thing that I thought was really cool about it is that it still has a hood. And my mm-hmm. initial foray to going with a top quilt, I hated getting the drafts down the back of my neck. I love the fact that that particular product has a hood. It's a really thoughtful add to it.
Yeah, well, that was Adam's awesome idea. It's our lone proprietary addition to the hammock world and community. So we're pretty happy with the little wildfire hood. It's cool.
Yeah, it's a neat add-on. Well, gentlemen, that was that's kind of where we are for the conversation. We really appreciate the time that you spent to talk with us. Do you have anything that you'd want to add before we close up?
We just want to give a shout out to all the garage and bonus room innovators out there that keeps the community healthy and happy and you know, hope, you know, one more hammock in the tree is another vote for for getting off the ground. So we really appreciate you guys having us.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
So, Mark.
Yes, Jonathan.
Do you think of yourself as a Graham Weenie?
No, not really. I keep an eye on what I bring, sort of, but I like to keep an eye on weights and everything, but I'm going to more of a practical, not worrying about weight too much, but it's always in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I know you got the new quilt. I was amazed that you weren't jumping up and down when Preston mentioned the DIY underquilt from Costco.
Yep. Yeah, I finished that up, and I'm working on the second one that I got. So, it can get expensive being too much of a Graham Weenie, but, if you want to buy all the newest and cheapest, lightest stuff, but, I just like to get out there. It is what it is.
Yeah.
So how about you?
You know, I don't think I'm obsessed with it, but I think about it a lot more than I did when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is that I want to spend more time hiking, and the simplest way to do that is to carry less, so that I've got essentially more endurance in this.
Yeah. Well, it's like we're all getting older and everything, so it's one of those things. If you can carry a little bit less, and instead of hearing the squeaks in your pack, you're hearing squeaks in your knees and joints. So if you can keep that to a minimum, it's always good.
Oh yeah, and a lot of the land that's available for hiking, at least around here, is more hilly, right? Because that's land that hasn't been converted to farmland or to usable land in some other way. That's a lot of the reason why the parks are where they are is, nobody's going to be tilling mountains.
Oh yeah, yep, yeah. That always comes into what's available to you locally and all. And yes, we definitely have our hills and ups and downs around here.
Yeah.
So.
But that being said, I guess I'm trying to carry as little as I can, but I'm willing to carry a little bit extra for one comfort or another. And I think that's where, there's a lot of conversation back and forth about how light is too light and what's crazy light and whatever. But I certainly could have a lighter kit, but I don't want to have to get up in the middle of the night to do sit-ups to warm myself back up. I'd rather have a warmer sleeping bag or a warmer underquilt so that I can be comfortable, a little bit comfortable, when I want to be.
Yeah, it all comes down to what you have space-wise and comfort-wise. Everybody sleeps at different levels, whether hot and cold, and what's your comfort during the day, and what you want to eat, and it comes down to another one of those real personal things, I think, and comfort and just getting out there. That's that's really what it all comes down to.
Well, the other thing too is to not obsess about it too much. I see a lot of people obsessing about their gear to try to shave an ounce off here or an ounce off there, and sometimes I feel like you could lose a couple of pounds is what I've thought in my head before worrying about spending an extra $100 to save a couple of grams.
Yeah, that definitely, I'm the same way. I almost feel like it'd be easier to just, not have that extra bag of chips or something. And save some weight on myself instead of in my pack.
Well, yeah, and you'll get the health benefits from that too. So,
right.
I think most of our listeners already probably know, but there are three different types of I guess, classes, right? There's regular backpacking, there's lightweight,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a base weight of what, above 10 pounds, 10 to 20 pounds?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And then the ultralighters who have their base weight, which is non-consumables, under 10 pounds.
Right.
And then there's the crazy people who put everything in a fanny pack and go out.
Yeah, I still don't get. I mean, that's getting a little crazy.
Well, it is. I mean, there's definitely some comforts that I wouldn't want to abandon. Up here in the Northeast, we have mosquitoes, so it's my preference to have a mosquito net, and I know that yep. I'm carrying a little extra for that. I like to stay a little warm, and I think my top quilt's probably a little heavier than yours is because I like to stay really warm at night, and I tend to be a cold sleeper. So those are the things I sacrifice. But I'm still able to squeak into the lightweight space, and that seems to work well for me. I'm usually carrying like you know, 20, 21 pounds.
Yeah, and I've helped a lot also going with the upgrading my system from what I originally started off with. Now I'm not really using my Kelty anymore. I did my DIY tarps, so you know that cut that weight down in half. Mm-hmm. And you know, that was an economical thing for me, and it was actually my first real big DIY project, so it all came down, you know, everything came together for that really well.
Yeah,
but you know, just little bits of here and there. And I think also technology, you know, not even just I'm purposely going getting lightweight and everything, just everything in general, newer stuff is getting lighter and easier to use and taking up less space. I think from back when I was in Boy Scouts, and you know, I look at pictures and I see what's on my back and on the other scout's back, I'm like, that's just crazy. Mm-hmm. the size of the big frames and external frames, everything lashed onto the backs of it, that's I couldn't imagine doing that now.
No. Well, no, I'd have to agree with you. I mean, the lighter denier materials that are still pretty durable. I know a lot of people are really excited about some of the water-resistant and waterproof downs that are out, which, you know, gives mm-hmm. you kind of the best of both worlds.
Right.
So, you know, you don't have that risk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, definitely it's tough to be carrying something and then gets all wet and you're unable to use it.
Yeah, that's not a
risk. Or it's not going to serve its purpose.
Yeah, that's definitely not a risk I'd be comfortable with.
Yeah, so.
But I know focusing on it and then telling other people what they should do is two really big, very different things.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, you know, same thing. It all comes down to, you know, what you're comfortable doing and what your goal is in doing. Now, there's people that want to just go out there, pull up to their campsite in their car, mm-hmm. unload their big, you know, Rubbermaid bins and Dutch spend ovens. The weekend there. Dutch ovens and, you know, coolers full of beverages and everything and spend the weekend. And, you know, that's all great. Other people want to pull up to the trailhead, you know, walk 10, 15 miles to their campsite. And what they've got with them is what they've got. And that's it. So yeah. And other people do a little bit of everything.
Yep.
So. Yeah.
I'm kind of a little bit there. I've actually got a couple of different sets of stuff for different types of experiences. You know, I car camp obviously with the family. You know, my wife's not a backpacker, and the kids don't necessarily want to go backpacking. So, I've definitely got the car camping gear.
Right.
And when I want to go out and do a little bit of a longer hike with the boys or whatever, we've got the gear for that too. And I think you're right. It depends on what somebody wants to get out of it and what they want to put in and what comfort items they want to bring. Somebody was telling me once that you can buy an aluminum instead of cast iron Dutch oven for backpacking, which sounds bizarre if you're thinking lightweight. But on the other hand, you know, if you're willing to carry 30 or 40 pounds, you know, because you want to have – if you want to cook and you enjoy cooking, then
right.
all the better, you know. I'd probably be even willing to carry a little extra load to bring the food for somebody who's carrying a Dutch oven so that I can maybe share a little bit.
Yeah, if you are with a group of people, you know, even a small group, that may possibly work, because you're not going to, you know, a lot of with our little backpacking stoves and alcohol stoves, we're cooking for ourselves mainly, mm-hmm. where Dutch oven... You can, I mean, something like that. I mean, you're going to just carry the stove. You're not going to be cooking for just yourself.
Right.
So, although, you know, you're getting into a pot, one pot, as opposed to somebody's complete setup, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. comparing, but definitely not ultra lightweight on that part.
No, and maybe that's for a person who's not in a hurry either, because you've got to set up a fire and get some hot coals going and then prep the Dutch oven and do whatever prep cook you have to do too. Yeah. It sounds like that'd be a fun experience as well.
Yeah, why don't you tell me about that?
When I have it, I'll let you know. Well, maybe winter camping or something like that.
You know, yeah,
where you
can
pull more on a pulk, or you need to have a lot more calories.
There you go. Yeah, it's something. I mean, that's another thing. Like what you're doing. You know, if you've got a pulk and you can handle the little extra weight and space, that would work. Mm-hmm. And you probably, you know, you may not be doing, you know, 10, 15 miles to a campsite. You're only doing a couple hundred yards up to 1 or 2 miles, right. where, you know, it's not going to be an all-day thing on your back or pulling with your shoulders.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, you know what it comes down to is hike your own hike, hang your own hang. You know, if that's what works for you, and I'd say this to anybody in our audience, you got to find what works for you and stick with it. And if somebody tries to tell you you're doing it wrong, I don't see how they could be right. You know, if you're having fun and you're getting into the outdoors and having an experience that you can remember and share with other people, that's probably enough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, outside of like a personal safety, if it's not going to injure yourself or somebody else, everything else is just personal. What's your comfort? And what's good for one person may not be good for the other person.
Yeah, that's true. I've seen stories of people who try to avoid bringing shelter on the AT, for instance, and they figure that they can just take a spot in the shelters no matter what because they don't have a tent. And that's certainly not too cool.
You know? Yeah.
The shelters are definitely first come, first serve. And if you've got no shelter, it's not right to be bumping other people because you can't plan ahead and be prepared.
Yeah, especially when people, you know, they may have made a purpose to try and either not go that extra stretch between one shelter to the other so they can be in a shelter, even though they've got their personal shelter on themselves. Or, you know, they may be planning something, and then if you're coming in late and there is no spot and kick somebody out that was planning that, that just doesn't seem like it would be the good thing to do.
Yeah, yeah, that's not being a good steward of the trail.
Right. So, next month, coming up for our podcast, we've got Ben Lon from the Leave No Trace organization, which is something great that's been talked quite a bit about on the message boards mm-hmm. about hammock camping and, you know, the areas that I did remember reading some people that had issues with some either scout leaders or rangers about whether they are allowed to camp or not, or hang in their hammock because of what it does to the trees. So I know in our preliminary discussions with Ben, he mentioned that there were some studies going on. So it'd be interesting to hear what their organization has to say.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
So Jonathan, we've gotten a lot of great feedback from our listeners over the past year. It's always encouraging to hear them, their ideas, and you know what they enjoy and don't like from mm-hmm. what we've done so far.
Yeah, it has been. I think it's pretty cool that people are willing to kind of reach out and share their experiences or how they feel about what we're producing.
Yeah, it's great to see that people, you know, enjoy listening to what we've been doing so far, mm-hmm. and you know, it sort of makes it worthwhile.
Yeah.
So a couple of them that we've heard so far on the forums from Scarecrow. Scarecrow says, really enjoyed this episode, fellas. Coincidentally, I just returned from a cold weather trip yesterday. I wish I would have heard this before heading out. Definitely could have used some tips from it on this trip. As always, though, we survived. As mentioned in the podcast, once you experience some of the discomforts from being ill-prepared, you typically won't make those same mistakes again. Of course, Scarecrow is talking about the cold weather forum we had last month.
Yeah, that was a very popular forum. It was nice to see some feedback on that. We put a lot of effort into getting that one together. We wanted to bring it out just before the cold weather started hitting. So that was cool.
Yeah, it was fun to do, and I think a lot of people enjoyed listening to it.
Yeah, the outtakes were more fun than the intakes.
Yep, yeah, yeah, if only people could hear. Then we have another one from iTunes, from Quiet Dissidents. I really enjoyed hearing the backstories of the infamous members of Hammock Forums. This podcast is informative, yet has a laid-back flow for easy listening. Keep up the good work. Well, thanks for listening, Quiet Dissidents.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, we really enjoy making it, I think. And finally, from John's Pen on the forums, really enjoyed the podcast. I've been a first 40 miles fan since my wife and I started our hiking and camping trips earlier this year. It was interesting hearing about their first experience and the challenges they faced. At least they had someone who knew what he was doing to help them. We had to figure it out all on our own, with help from the forums, of course. Also enjoyed the segment about taking the kids out. Thanks. Yeah, that was another interesting, of course, talking about the 40 miles podcast that we did, and you went out west to show them hammock camping.
Yeah, it was fun. It was an opportunity. Even from earlier on, I wanted to try doing a podcast with people who had no experience to get kind of a before and after experience. And it was great working with both of the folks from the First 40 Miles. They have a great podcast as well. So really great comments out there. I'd love to hear any more ideas or suggestions you guys have. Keep them coming either on iTunes or our social media accounts. We really love to hear from all you hangers out there.
And that's the show for this month. As always, you can find us at www.hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at HYOH Podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes. Or even better, you can join our growing team of Patreon sponsors.
That's right, Mark. Even though the podcast is free for our listeners, it's not completely free to produce or host. If you really enjoy the show and like listening to the guests that we bring on every month to talk about hammock camping, you have a choice. You can donate monthly by going to our Patreon fundraising page at patreon.com/HYOH podcast, or make a one-time contribution by going directly to www.hyohpodcast.com/donate. You can buy Mark and I a cup of coffee. So, you know, Thanksgiving's coming. And you know what I will be doing on Black Friday?
Not shopping?
Heck yeah, not shopping. And I'll bet, like me, a whole lot of our listeners are going to be avoiding Black Friday shopping like the plague that it is on our lives. So maybe they'd like to go and order a new Yukon Outfitters Wildfire Top Quilt or Kindle Bottom Quilt and try hammock camping in the cooler months this year. Or maybe even get a full hammock hanging kit, including one of their hammocks, a walkabout tarp, and a no-fly zone bug net. And as a special offer for you, our listeners, Yukon has given us a special 25% off promo code to use when making their Christmas purchases, HYOH16.
That's pretty generous, especially for an American-made quality hammock. I think I might have to finally spring for another one, knowing that every hammock comes with its own suspension, which means that I don't have to think about that with my new hammock. So go to yukonoutfitters.com, that's yukon-outfitters.com, and be sure to use the promo code HYOH16 when you take care of all your holiday shopping.
And while you're rounding out the holiday shopping, go to hokehammock.com and check out some of their new designs, including hammock coffee, and my new favorite, since I'm kind of a math nut, greater than. I'm sure that anyone who's proud to be a hammock camper would love to buy one. And since Hote Hammock is one of our episode sponsors, our listeners can use the discount code HYOH15 in the shopping cart when they go to hotehammock.com and purchase a few hammock t-shirts for Christmas. That's HOUTEHammock.com.
Since we're thanking our sponsors, we should also acknowledge some of those folks who have become patrons or donated or contributed in some way to our show. Thanks much this month to Marvin Four for the generous shout-out in his YouTube review of Doc Bronner's. As always, if you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at mark@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com. Finally, special thanks to Skid Von Ark for allowing us to use his music for our intro and our outro, and to ITX for hosting our podcast. Thanks everyone for hanging around.
A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it?
Or should you even dare?
Add two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle. Yeah.